Join me in prayer. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable to you, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Our first preacher today is behind you on the screen, or you'll be able to see this at home if you're joining us on Zoom, so I invite you to turn or join in watching with me.
There's an old Indian saying that to live here and understand the world, you gotta love it. People love money, some people love material things. I love that race. I do. I love that race and that lake out there. I loved it all my life. I'm 65 now, so that's 55 years that I've actually been out there somewhere doing rice. My mom made us go pick it and buy our own school clothes. So I learned the different things of that manoma and what it does for me. These two little bony arms, once I get going out there, I don't want to quit. I got this rhythm. They call it a wham, 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 wham. That's the rhythm. Now a polar, he keeps up with that rice. He goes into the ripe stuff and tries to get the best heads he sees. So that guy's rhythm gets all them plants on both sides. As much as we can get in every two hits, he's pulling. I'm keeping that tap. In my mind, every time I hit a new plant, I'm saying, Miigwech, thank you. Every Miigwech, Miigwech in my mind. And then the rice comes in for me. Because I'm honoring and praying to that rice, giving it that respect that going to keep me and my partner going, no matter if I'm polling or the guy tapping the rhythm. When I touch them cedar sticks on that rice and it comes off, I know them babies are going to eat, my drum's going to be fed, the life's going to go on for another year. That's gratitude. My grandma's call it roasting and parching. She liked to use the word roasting better because of the aroma and what she did with her hands and fire and tools she used to make that come out dehydrated enough to last all winter for 5 years maybe. If you don't get it wet or you can store it right, it'll be good for you. That medicine. In my growing up in my traditions, the older people told me that the Creator gave us this manoman to help us survive for our time that we spend here with Him. It's the Creator's food, and that Mother Earth, she gives it to us to use. That's why they call it food that grows on the water. So I'm trying to keep that for all the Anishinaabe people and prayers going and eating that food every year. Because we believe if we stop that tradition, that the world's going to stop. That's why it's important for the Indian people to keep on with our traditions and our spiritual thinking. Because if we stop, what if the world does stop?
I wanted you to see a little bit of the rice fields where the Enbridge Energy Line 3 expansion is slated to pump 1 billion gallons of tar sands oil through Alberta, Canada, into northern Minnesota, and on to Wisconsin. Once there, the oil will be processed and shipped around the world. In the areas that you saw, the line will run through those untouched wetlands in treaty territories of the Anishinaabe people. Tribal opponents of the pipeline have tried to remind lawmakers that all pipelines spill, threatening indigenous peoples and their cultures. They've told legislators that Line 3 protects a dying oil industry that feeds climate change. As a part of the effort to stop the pipeline expansion, the White Earth Band of the Ojibwe people filed a lawsuit in tribal court to block the line. But what caught my eye is who is listed as the primary plaintiff. It's the Manuman, the wild rice, the food that grows on water. That is the plaintiff in the lawsuit. For the Chippewa, the document reads, Manuman is alive like all living creatures, and they are our relations. We Chippewa have a sacred covenant with the Manuman and the water, the Nibi, and all living creatures, which without we cannot live. Wild rice sustains their bodies, and it is a gift of Creator. But because Manuman is in a sacred relationship with the Anishinaabe, this gift is given in such a way that the Manuman and the tribe exist in a mutual relationship of survival. If the pipeline construction takes the water from the wetlands, they will destroy the Manuman and in the process threaten the sacred covenant. For the Anishinaabe, creation is a gift, but it's also a gift that forms a bond, not just between giver and receiver, but between creatures. You are a creature, and so am I. This is at the heart of the stories we heard in poetic form in Genesis today. In the beginning, God creates the heaven and the earth. And earth is clearly a gift, an extension of the God whose whole being is creative love, as we heard last week in John 1. When I first started thinking about gifts in the Bible, creation was so obvious. God looks at all God has created and calls it good. We don't get the impression that God means morally good, making good choices. After all, God calls light good, and as far as I know, light cannot be righteous or just. Instead, God looks and sees the goodness of completion, something whole that fits together, that's all formed for its purpose. Creation has everything it needs unto itself. It is a reflection of a good and holy God. This is sacred land, made for enjoyment and mutual care. We cannot hear James Weldon Johnson without sensing the profundity of this gift. The oak spread out its arms, the lakes cuddled down in the hollows of the ground, and the rivers ran down to the sea. But there's another question here. If creation is a gift, who receives it? If a gift is given, it has to be received. So what is the aim of this gift of creation? Much of our Christian theology has centered around creating hierarchies of creatures to answer that question. Earth and trees, all swimming creatures and things that fly, this theology goes, are made for us. For people. There's a pyramid with God at the top, people underneath, and everything else at the bottom. Thinking about this distinction of us, rational creatures made in the image of God, Thomas Aquinas looked at the covenant between Noah and God and wrote, "Now animals and plants were made for the upkeep of human life. Because it's written, even as the green herb have I delivered all flesh to you. Therefore, when man's animal life ceases, animals and plants should cease. But after this renewal, animal life will cease in man. Neither plants nor animals will remain. In other words, Thomas imagines that people, once we are no longer here, will cause the entire earth to disappear. What's the point of a waterfall if people aren't there to enjoy it? What's the point of fish if humans aren't there to eat them? And when we hear Genesis 1, we can see how early Christian readers of the Bible might have gotten from here to there. You may remember that we read that people are created for dominion over creation. Do you all remember that? That is an intense word. It conveys rulership. As it is, the word dominion in Genesis 1 has been used by people over ages for horrific exploitation of our natural resources. With this mind of domination, we have destroyed non-human animal life in poisoned land and earth. But what's often overlooked in this way of reading the Bible is that this command about dominion, giving dominion over all the earth, it comes on the heels of something else. Let's make people in our image, according to our likeness. People will order and shape the earth according to being images of God. And what is God? But endless, creative, overflowing love that cares for and nurtures life. People will be God's ambassadors to creation, fish and birds and plants, reenacting this love and care as a source of life for all creation. As it is, creation is a very unique kind of gift. It's this particular strange gift where both the giver and the receiver are the same. Let me explain. So we are creatures. But creation isn't just given to us alone. We aren't handed over the earth to do whatever we decide to do with it, extracting what we can, treating animals however we want. Instead, we are bound up as part of creation, this life that is always giving and receiving itself, a generous, sustaining partnership with other created things. In Genesis 1, we hear that every plant that yields seed upon the earth, every tree with seed for its fruit, that's given to people for food. But without missing a beat, God proclaims that every green plant is given for animals and birds for their food. Creation bears for everyone. Both human and non-human receive it as a gift. God, I think, anticipates that we might overlook this cyclical gift where the line of giver and receiver dissolves, and so we are given a second account of creation. In this account, the writer of Genesis does not center on human dominion over the earth. In this version of the story, we learn that people are made of dirt. We are quite literally fashioned from the earth. That's what Adam means, the earth. Not only that, in the second story, we learn that human creatures are called into being because God realizes that the earth needs some people to take care of it. People are made because there's no one to till the ground. In Genesis 1, the earth is given over to humans for rulership. But in Genesis 2, we learn that people are created because the earth needs care and nurture. These two stories together reveal that creation is given to itself. If we people mutually receive the gift of creation alongside other creatures, while at the same time we are a gift of creation, that radically changes how we think about our relationship to fellow creatures. We don't just receive a gift, we participate in it. It is indigenous people like the Anishinaabe who've drawn us back towards these creation stories, linking together the gift of creatures for one another. In 1855, young chief of the Cayuse tribe refused to sign the Treaty of Walla Walla because he noticed something. In the treaty papers, the earth had no say in the contract. Here's what he said. I wonder if the ground has anything to say. I wonder if the ground is listening to what is said. I wonder if the ground would come alive and what is on it. I hear what the ground says. The ground says, it is the Great Spirit that placed me here. The Great Spirit tells me to take care of the Indians, to feed them aright. The Great Spirit appointed me the roots to feed the Indians on. The water says the same thing. The Great Spirit directs me. Feed the Indians well. The ground says, the Great Spirit placed me here to produce all that grows in me in trees and fruit. And the same ground says, it was for me man was made. The Great Spirit placed men on earth and desires them to take good care of the ground and to do each other no harm. We are first and before all things created by God. The theologian David Kao reminds us that we share 21% of our genes with all other cellular forms of life. A fifth of our genetic makeup is common between us and bacteria and seaweed and cabbages and oak trees. We share 3/4 of our genes with every other animal on earth. 97% with orangutans, 98.5% with gorillas, and 98.9% with chimpanzees. Our primary biological solidarity is to other creatures. That biological reality is a reflection of our orientation towards one another. And this offers us an interesting kind of freedom. We belong to one another. We are coordinated to one another. All creaturely life has part in God's purpose. If you look back at the stories in Genesis, you can actually hear this as God is parceling vegetable life out for sustenance. As creatures are made in the sort of days of creation, they become more free in some ways. They're able to move further, as some biblical scholars have pointed out. But you know what else is true? As creation becomes more complex, it becomes more dependent. Light and dark are created first. They don't need anything at all for their survival. The sun and the moon require gases that can burn for millions of years, but they don't need to sleep or eat. Next, we come to living creatures, animals that need sleep and food and water and healing from injury. We end creation not with the most masterful of species, but with the most dependent of all, people. People who are born and then require years before they can walk or run to escape predators. People who are dependent upon the care and nutrition of another person's body for years before they can feed themselves on their own. Peoples whose bodies are so fragile that our skin is only slightly tougher than paper, who can go no more than 2 or 3 days without water. People whose bodies will shut down outside a very small range of heat or cold. People who can not only die from hunger or disease, but from loneliness or despair. I think a lot about my relationship to these fellow creatures on Earth when I go out to my flower garden. I planted this garden as a gift for pollinators. I tend these beds of aster and milkweed and coreopsis and purple coneflower. But my favorite is the Guara lindheimeri. You can correct me on that afterwards, Angel. More commonly known to us as bee balm. Bee balm has this incredibly long stem with these white flowers at the top. And in the morning, when I go out to check on my bees, they're sitting on these flowers and bouncing up and down. It's like this carnival ride for bees around my yard. And I love to watch them. And I pray for my bees and my butterflies and even sometimes my wasps. I pray for them because I know that their flourishing depends on mine. My garden is a gift to these creatures, created as I am. The gift of their life returns to me, as God intended all of creation to return to itself as a gift, because we are bound in mutual gifting as God's creation. Amen.